The following program, Chicago's Weekend Wake-Up Call, is sponsored by the Digital Wellness Center and, to the extent applicable, their guests. The views and opinions expressed therein do not necessarily reflect those of Heartland Signal, LLC, or its management.
Well, good morning, everyone. Welcome to Digital Wellness with Dr. Mary. I am Dr. Mary Donahue, and I'm excited for you to join us today because we're going to take a little detour in our traditional talking about neuroscience and a number of other topics today. Today, we're going to talk about you. We're going to talk about communication, and we're going to talk about wellness in communication. All of this is driven by the number of entrepreneurs that reached out to me after a LinkedIn post recently where I talked about being an entrepreneur and some of the data we collected. And one thing we're learning is communication is ever evolving digitally. And today, Richardson, we have one of our favorite guests returning. Who's coming back, my friend?
Oh, thank you for the great introduction, and today we're having a special guest, Jeremy Miller, a seasoned entrepreneur known for his innovative venture insights into the challenges of running a business in today's world.
Thank you, Rich. Welcome, Jeremy.
Hello, Rich and Dr. Mary. Such a pleasure to be here.
We are so happy to have you here, and we are excited to talk about your book, Sticky Branding, your business, and all the wonderful things that you do. I know Richardson came in and out a little bit on that great introduction, but the one thing that he forgot to mention, which I forgot to tell him, is that you are not the author of just one best-selling book. You are the author of two best-selling books. And I know you're probably working on your third right now, but what's interesting is you write what people want to read. And you're talking about how to make your brand and yourself sticky. And by sticky, can you define what you mean a little bit about that?
Sure. So I have been working at Sticky Branding, or we founded Sticky Branding in 2011. And before that, I worked within a family business. And over the last 20 years, what we have found is that any business of any size can grow a sticky brand. And what that means is, how do you get your customers to know you, like you, and trust you so that they choose your brand first? And you don't have to have the best products or the best prices. It's that relationship or that bond you form with your customers. And when you do that, they come back to you again and again. And that relationship, that connection is what makes your business sticky.
Got it. Now, it's funny you mentioned the brand. It's funny you mentioned making it sticky. Because you know what we had was the internal problem of making a brand sticky in 2024. And what I mean by that is dealing with a multi-generational staff and a multi-generational consumer. Because we're not all together anymore, we're dealing with different opinions, different views. And when we come back, I'd like to take a little break. But when we come back, what I'd like to talk about is a multi-generational staff and dealing within a multi-generational world where the problem is we see everything as negative 90% of the time. So, Devin, if we can throw to you for a break and then we'll head into segment one, please.
Hey there, friends. Have you ever had that nagging feeling that something just isn't quite right with your digital habits?
We've all been there. In today's hyper-connected world, it's easy to feel like we're losing ourselves in the digital noise.
But what if I told you that there's a way to break free from that feeling of unease? Introducing Dr. Mary's eye-opening book, Digital Addiction: What It Is and How One Sister and Brother Dealt With It.
Picture this. The Johnson family slowly begins to realize that their youngest child's behavior is changing, and not for the better. Could it be linked to their excessive time spent on social media?
Or consider the story of a young undergraduate who lost nearly an entire year of their life to online gaming. It's a wake-up call that digital addiction can happen to anyone at any time.
Inside the pages of Digital Addiction, you'll uncover the real stories of individuals just like you who've grappled with the dark side of digital dependence.
Dr. Mary's insights will guide you through practical strategies to regain control of your digital life and to find peace in a world that's constantly vying for your attention.
So if you're ready to confront those uneasy feelings and reclaim your sense of balance, grab your copy of Digital Addiction today.
Are you ready to hit your stride and to turn those frowns upside down? Say hello to mystride.co, your ultimate companion for conquering bad moods and transforming them into pure positivity. Imagine receiving uplifting emails 3 times a week, filled with personalized tips and tricks to help you navigate through life's ups and downs. With mystride.co, we've mastered the art of gamifying your mood, turning those gloomy days into opportunities for growth and joy. Harness the power of our magical formula, designed to guide you towards a brighter, more fulfilling day. It's as easy as 1, 2, 3. Step 1. Open your inbox and discover your personalized mystride.co email, packed with practical strategies to overcome any obstacle in your path. Step 2. Embrace the challenge and put our tips into action, turning each setback into a stepping stone towards success. Step 3. Watch in amazement as your mood shifts and those clouds of negativity are replaced with rays of sunshine and optimism. Join the thousands of satisfied customers who are already experiencing the transformative power of mystride.co. So why wait? Sign up now and take the first step towards a happier, more resilient you. Visit mystride.co now and start your journey towards greatness.
Thank you, Devin. Thank you, everybody. And today we're welcoming Jeremy Miller, best-selling author of Sticky Branding and CEO of a firm by the same name. How clever is that? Jeremy, the first thing that we really want to talk about today is how you're helping businesses deal with a multi-generational staff and a multi-generational consumer. In all my work, whether it's in online gaming for young adults, whether it's in gambling, whether it's in dealing with digital distress, the one thing I point out to everyone is when we look at a message digitally, it's 90% negative in our brain. So already we're a bit angry when we read something from someone. And that causes us to begin constantly to go into chronic anxiousness. How do we connect with people when this is happening?
That's a great question and a challenging question. I go back to something that I learned from your book, Message Received, which is every generation is shaped by its events. And we can complain about generation. So the boomers complain about Generation X, and Generation X complains about the millennials, and millennials complain about Gen Z. And it's this vicious circle, and everyone's saying that the next generation is terrible. The reality is people are people. They haven't changed since the dawn of time, but their events shape them, and their events shape their understanding of the world and the way they communicate. And so both for leadership and marketing, this is a really important insight. And I think what you're saying about anger is an even greater insight. But let's just go to the first one. In the first insight, you have to be contextually relevant. For leadership, how do you procure the best results out of your people? How do you empower them to be successful? And you have to come to people's level, which if you're in a multi-generational workforce, can be challenging, which is adapting your communication style to be engaging each level. And the same thing happens in marketing, where you have to be contextually relevant. But if you're not, that anger piece that you're describing kicks in. So I'd be very curious to hear from your take, Dr. Mary, how do these generational events inform us to be able to communicate more effectively to our employees or to our customers?
Jeremy, thanks for bringing up the book. I often forget to talk about my own work, particularly in this exercise, in this venue, being radio or talking or serving people. But the thing that we need to talk about is what you're speaking of is generational anchoring benchmarks. And that's what makes each generation different. And I'm like, welcome, Rich, to jump in here. But when boomers went to work, one of the things we know is they heard productivity. They could hear people talking in the office. They could hear people typing on typewriters. Typewriters are a lot louder than a computer. And so what happens is you begin to associate sounds with work, which makes audio a great way for you to receive messages. For example, if you're a young person like Rich, they would like you to leave them a voicemail versus texting them or doing any of that anything. They want to hear your voice, to understand the tone in your voice. If you take me, who's a Gen X, then one of the things that we look at is visual. When we went to work, we saw productivity. There were pink slips for how many voicemail messages you had. You saw people working on your computer. You created PowerPoints. Gen X has been online on a personal computer since they were 12, basically. Computers were introduced at that time in terms of schools, and then as you went through to graduate school or undergraduate or high school, all of those, they were computers, but you always worked on your own. So you saw a single person working on a computer and then coming together. Millennials, like yourself, you're a Gen X millennial, they experienced productivity via short messaging. So by the time they were going into the workforce, email was there, and that's a very tactile form of communication. You're typing your thoughts. So they felt. And then we get to Richardson's generation, Gen Z, and they're the first generation to be totally digital. They used Google Classroom in school. They used memes. They used YouTube as a search engine versus, say, for example, Google. And what all this means is we're looking and experiencing the technology differently. So when you're designing an ad, or you're designing an HR policy, or when you're throwing a family party and writing the invitation, you want to think of the easiest way to communicate.
I so love what you're saying there. And let me give you a very simple example that I've learned dealing with a young workforce. So I'm 47 and my employees are between 27 and 31. And we are a remote workforce, so we end up talking a lot on WhatsApp and Google Chat and Slack and all these messaging things. And I would reply to messages with a thumbs up or an okay or a K. And what I discovered was that's often interpreted as passive aggressive. And I had no intention to be that way. I would just be closing the loop in terms of a response, but it's received very differently. And so this is where I think it's really challenging and requires self-awareness from a leadership perspective, is you got to understand exactly what you're describing, because it affects you in your day-to-day, minute-by-minute communications.
And Rich, jump right in whenever you can, is like he's going to have to learn to interpret your communication clearly because he's in sales.
Yeah, exactly. And one thing that I do agree with Jeremy is like, especially when he brought up his experience of the way he communicated, I totally would have seen it the same way. I'd be like, oh, shoot, is something wrong? But that communication between generations is very key, and trying to understand each generation so that as a whole, everything can move forward. But before I like to continue, I wanted to reach out to our listeners and see what they have to say. So you can reach us or text us, call or text us at 773-763-9278 and join this great conversation.
Rich, could you give that number again, please?
Yeah.
I was trying to write it down and you were so quick.
Oh, sorry.
Gen Z.
It's 773-763-9278. I'll say it one more time. 773-763-9278.
Brilliant. Thank you. And we'll look forward to those texts. The thing that people always begin to talk about, Jeremy, when we start going down this road of generation is, like, tell me more about me. Why am I this way, and why do people respond to me this way? And it's interesting when I start to look at really clever marketers, because what they're beginning to realize is the internet has created a narcissistic culture. So it is all about us. What about me? How do I, like, it's, you know, the easiest way to say, what are you doing to help me in my pain? going back to earlier where I talked about everybody is chronically anxious. In fact, 8 out of 10 of us are suffering from chronic anxiety. And that the next step in chronic anxiety is burnout, according to the American Psychological Association. We call it screen stress syndrome. And so if we're trying to catch someone's attention internally or even externally, I remember seeing a brand do a very clever ad that talked about pet food during the Super Bowl. And the idea was they were talking about a relationship, and the woman was coming over to the man's house to for dinner. And she sees this raw pet food and she says, "Oh my God, are we eating that?" And then she sees like this cold lasagna in a plastic thing. And he says, "No, we're eating the lasagna. My dog is getting that." And she was so undone that the dog's dinner looked better than her dinner that she left. And next picture is the dog and the guy sitting on the floor and the guy saying to the dog, "Yeah, you were right. She isn't right for us." But what it was talking to was the problem in relationships and the idea that dogs have become such a part of the family since COVID, or, you know, pets in general. I'm sure they have some sort of funny ad for cats. But it was a really great way of selling pet food because it was talking about the problem of establishing intimacy in a relationship. So, Jeremy, how is that going to play in, like, in marketing? How is it going to play internally when you know that the person is really just thinking about themselves versus thinking about what you want them to buy from you? Does that make sense?
It does. And I think what's really interesting in marketing right now is our paradigms and understanding of marketing and advertising are all in a state of transformation right now. And part of it is that these human issues that you're describing with social media and content, and we are bombarded every single day with all of this content that is, as you say, very narcissistic and negative. And so one of the things that is really coming out of this is brand loyalty is really dropping at a precipitous pace. That even large brands like Nike, consumers used to be only a Nike brand or only a Ford mm-hmm. brand. They would have that generational, my dad was drive Fords, I drive Fords, that type of scenario. Mm-hmm. People are now buying what's available to them in that moment. Yeah. And so what does that mean? Well, one of the things that's coming out is that people will connect to values. They'll connect to people they identify with. And so in the ad example you gave, they demonstrated a story and a shared experience. But what works even better right now is it's almost that connection to personality that we know, like them or hate them, you know Elon Musk, you know Steve Jobs. In the smaller social media examples, it tends to be we can follow along with a person. And so what's becoming more effective is not just content-based advertising, there's too much content. It's how do I form a bond or a connection with that business? And that often requires a very uncomfortable choice for the entrepreneur or the owner is they have to be more present in social media. They have to tell the company's story. They have to share what they believe in so that people can, because if option A and option B are all the same, I'm going to go with the company that I have a better connection with. So you end up having to bring more of yourself into your brand and more of your people and your values into your brand so that a consumer can relate to you so that they understand you are like them, you are connected to their values, and that has a significant influence on how they buy right now.
That's fascinating. It makes so much sense because people to people is how we connect on the internet, like through a social media app.
Exactly. I'll give you a very specific example. So I'm based in the Toronto area. There is a demolition company called Manpower Demolition. You can find them on Instagram at Manpower Demolition. Fernando is the owner, and so he's got a small team, but his organization has blown up because he's got two people that follow him around videotaping him and showcasing clips and reels on a weekly basis. And he is entertaining. He's authentic. He shares the entrepreneurial life. And when I talk to people in the construction industry, everybody knows Fernando. Everybody wants to work with Fernando and his team. It's because they feel like they know him, even though they've never met him. And those simple tactics are very effective.
Isn't that funny? It's so interesting. I was interviewed for a magazine recently, and you know, I thought the gentleman would want to talk to me about my product, but what he wanted to talk to me about, as you heard in the book, you know, I wrote a book recently on digital addiction, and I've got a book here on digital communication and body language. And the one thing everybody wants to talk about is not about the book, but how I wrote the book and the stories in the book and my brother in the book. And then I talk about some friends and message received and their generational communication problems. What I think is really interesting is everybody's trying to find themselves right now in our work. And so I don't know, but Richardson, from the point of view of sales, because I know you're a director of sales, like, can you see this in your work?
100%, absolutely. When it all comes down to when you're trying to sell, you're not trying to sell a product, but trying to sell or build a relationship with your client or customer. As everyone knows, like, if you are close with your own client, that's when they are more inclined to build a relationship. And so I see that all the time. And I'm still continuing to learn how to build these relationships. And I'm learning a lot even now, listening to Jeremy, and as he shared his experiences with it, and especially from his book, too, Sticky Branding. And I love it. And so, but these are all things that I see even when we're out and about trying to gain more clients.
You know, it's super fun, Richardson. I just got a text from somebody, so I want to talk about what you just said, but I'd also like to address this text. It says, "I'm a Jeremy. I have young staff, but I'm tired. Why do I have to always be the one to accommodate them?" Do you want to try that one first, Jeremy?
Please, I want to hear what you say because I don't have a politically correct answer for them.
You know, I'm pretty sure that we should. I still want to hear your answer, but I'll tell you the easiest way to think about it is money. If you want your staff to get the job done so that you can earn money, you're going to have to do what you naturally do, which is when you're in person with somebody, you tend to mirror their body language, whether you know it or not. And that allows their mammalian brain to say, oh, hey, they get me. And that allows them to get rid of that fight or flight response they're experiencing. And so when you're digital, the problem is you have to make a little more of an effort because we've only been doing this since 2007. And, you know, with the advent of the smartphone, we didn't work this much online with Blackberries. And so all you have to do is begin to train yourself. And we can talk a little bit about this, to look for the words that match your team so that you can give their team what they need. So let me give you an example. If you have a team member that's constantly late with projects, that constantly doesn't care, that constantly demonstrates to you that, you know, they're very talented at what they do, but they're not engaged with what they do. As an owner, you have two ways to go. You could fire that person, which takes so much work, or you could figure out what that person's triggers are. And one of the cases I dealt with, the triggers were this was a millennial, and they need to feel the cause. They need to feel good, but they also need to feel important. Those are part of their generational anchoring benchmarks. If you think about how they were brought up in a world where their parents thought they were the most interesting, the most important, and just the most in the world. That was how parenting changed. From the parents being gods to parents and children being equals. I mean, in my case, Generation X, like it was always Mr. and Mrs. In Millennials' case, you called your parents Bob and Mary. So just thinking about that. So what I recommended they do is use some kinesthetic words to engage. So say, for example, say instead of saying you're a jerk, you didn't get this done, I don't understand you, like we need to talk, just saying, hey, are you interested in this work anymore or should we find something else for you? Now, can you see how that's two totally different responses?
100%. I think what I hear you saying, sorry, Rich, to cut you off, is I hear what you're saying is make it personal, but don't personalize it.
Mm-hmm. That's 100%. And, you know, the other part is the negativity. If you understand the demographics and the generational anchoring benchmarks of who your audience is, that allows you to digitally mirror so that they understand you better and you can build trust. The one thing I've noticed in my entrepreneurial journey, and you were just talking about it with the demolition guy, people need to trust you. And years ago in the 80s, there was a book called Relationship Sales, I think. I don't know if that was the title, but I remember professors talking about this and mentors talking about this. And so when I was introduced in Philadelphia to sales, the one thing they said is you have to understand the relational value in a sales, and it makes for a longer sales cycle. Then we started forgetting about that, and we started going on to digital quick hits, quick hits, quick hits. But if you remember and you go back to how really successful companies were built, they were built on the principle of free and building trust and building need. So look at Microsoft. Bill Gates spent a lot of time giving away his stuff for free so that it got integrated into people's systems. They found how much they needed it. But more importantly, Bill Gates got data on how they were using it so he could make a better product. And if we look at Apple and how Apple went to the market, Steve Jobs was mercurial on how he was approaching things. But now we're just like slam, bam, thank you, ma'am. And that transactional is dead now because people are exhausted by transactional. They want to have this relationship. Now, if you can understand how to build a relationship with words, that becomes the key to successful sales. Like, I think that I need to look at how to use video and hints and tips better. I, as a Gen X, am like, you know, I want to get into that quick hit sale, but it's not going to work in the area I'm in. So now hearing what you just said, I guess I'll have to think about Instagram. Clearly not TikTok anymore. My mom calls it Tiki Talk. I just want to call it that so badly. But, you know, if we get back to us in our individual lives, think of all the fights we've had with our family over a text or over a quick, harsh word. Language is the cause of all our problems right now. You know, we used to say there's an old, I think it's an Irish saying that says money is the cause or the root of all evil. I disagree. I think it's language is the root of all evil because we're not able to get our feelings across in a way that people can understand it. And I think the same thing's happening to brands. What about you? Do you believe that?
Who are you tossing that to?
Both of you. I'm liking the panel.
Rich, where do you stand? Rich, where do you sit on that?
I agree 100%. Yeah, communication is one of the strongest things that aligns people when we try to share what we want and our desires. So 100% agree with that.
Jeremy?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think that's been a constant since the dawn of time is that communication and being understood and being heard are perpetual human things and something that we have been struggling with forever. And I think what becomes challenging as we increase the volume of channels, the frequency of content, it all becomes more complicated. And And as you said many times today, we are afraid, we are anxious, we are frustrated and angry. And so we're working in a challenged environment. But if you don't mind, I'd like to come back to the question you received.
And great, I'd love to.
I totally hear the entrepreneur say, when is it my turn? And I'd love to reframe that and say, it's not. Your job is to serve your team and empower them. And I really love Radical Candor by Kim Scott. It's a book on leadership and communication. And she talks about whole person leadership. And so understanding where your team is coming from and coming to their level and communicating with them in a way that makes them heard and understood, I think, is everything in leadership. And it's not about you. It's about them as the first premise. But on the same token, there's also culture. One of the things that we work with a lot at Sticky Branding is values. And one of my beliefs is that if you have a person who is underperforming but who fits your culture perfectly, how do you train them? Are they in the wrong job? How do you develop them? That's an opportunity to invest in them. Now, within reason, you're not a charity, so you want to be able to get them up to speed within a reasonable amount of time. And if you can't, then you make a hard decision. But if someone doesn't reflect your values, they're toxic in your culture, they're toxic to you, they're toxic to their coworkers, they're toxic to your customers, whatever it might be, they just don't fit. There's no way to solve that problem. So that's not a communication issue. That's actually a values issue. And in that situation, there really is only one option, and that is you have to let them go for the health of your organization. That you are, your business and your team is an entity that you need to develop, to nurture, to grow in order for it to do what it's supposed to do, which is deliver a product or service your customers brilliantly, and deliver the ownership group, whether that's yourself or shareholders, on its objectives, whether that's revenue or profit or something else.
100%. Go ahead, Rich.
I really like that. When you were explaining that, the saying that came to my mind was, you're only as strong as your weakest link. And does that sound according to like what you're saying too? Because like if you are trying to bring up the person who fits your culture but is not really motivated, how does that affect the whole workforce?
Well, if somebody fits your culture but isn't motivated, do they really fit your culture? So I do think performance is a big part of this, because your team, I'll give you an example. I work with an organization who has an individual who's very well liked on the organization. He runs the social committees. He's the one that organizes the parties. He's just a super outgoing, nice person. But he is lazy. He is disorganized. He misses deliverables. He no-shows meetings. And his poor performance in work actually works against his likability. So while the team likes him as an individual, they hate working with him. And there was a great deal of fear for the longest time of letting this individual go because other people would be upset. But you know what? When he was finally let go and due to poor performance, the rest of the team came forward and started to thank the owner on it. And so likability is not necessarily values. It's how you work together. If you have a culture that is hardworking, that you don't go home until the last thing is done, which doesn't mean everyone has to work overtime every day, but you have a get it done mindset, you don't just leave it, then that's part of your values. Understanding what makes your team strong isn't all niceness. Hard work, competition, customer success, those types of things all can be forms of core values. So how your team operates is not all, like, just put in a generational side of things, it's not all millennial or Gen Z niceness and fairness and egalitarian. There is a performance element that we have to accept, acknowledge, and bake into our culture. And the more you understand it and codify it, the better you can nurture it.
I totally agree. And, you know, it's funny you bring that up because we were talking about the culture last week of gentle parenting and the culture of, oh, I can't do that because of self-care. I need self-care.
Yeah.
The thing people don't understand is, and this is what MyStride.co provides people, our guardrails. You know, that's why we developed it, is providing digital guardrails. If you work too much, you should do this. But if you do too much self-care, you're going to be so stressed. You're going to have high self-care and low productivity. The body, the mind. Alfred Adler said this in 1930. You need to work. You need to have a reason to get up in the morning. And when you do a hard day's work, you sleep. So, you know, what you were just talking about is amazingly important because as an individual, I do like a lot of people, but do I want to have a relationship with them? The answer is no, because they're always late for every event. They're always like, they always have an excuse or a reason. They always have those three people they go back to that are toxic. And you're like, I really enjoy a quick conversation with you or a quick text, but please don't engage me to go out for dinner or any of those things. Because I find it incredibly stressful when people don't respect you enough and they're like an hour late and you've basically eaten your dinner or, you know, you have other friends that say we're coming to your party and then don't show up. Because, you know, we just didn't feel like it. We were tired. And so we have to bring that back into the workforce. Like COVID got rid of all the guardrails and we need new guardrails. I got a funny text. And just remember, if you want to text or call in, the number is 773-763-9278. And the person probably didn't know I was going to talk about self-care. But they said, I feel like I work 12 hours or 15 hours a day for my boss, and they don't understand me. I'm a millennial. My boss is a boomer. What should I do? That's interesting. What are your thoughts?
Richard, I'm going to leave that one for you.
To be honest, I had a similar question to ask both of you, because both of you are entrepreneurs and you go through this. My question is, it correlates perfectly with this question is just how would you communicate, especially with someone who does a lot of self-care and not really have a lot of productivity, how would you communicate that well so that they are not, this is such a bad use of wording, but butthurt or like, yeah, I guess that's the only word I can think of, or like sensitive to it. But in regards to the question that was just asked, I think that's just a great question to figure out because I'm trying to figure that out myself.
Okay, I just want to address the caller, and then I'll address both, and then Jeremy and I can talk about being a boss. Number one, caller, you said, I don't feel. So thank you for using millennial words and millennial phrasing. One of the things you need to do is probably have a conversation with your boss. Your boss probably doesn't have any idea you feel that way. Your boss is probably working to make money, to pay their mortgage, thinking about their family, thinking about their loans. The thing you have to remember is they're probably not thinking about you. They're thinking about the task. Gen X or Gen X boomers are very task focused. They're not people focused. They want to get the job done. They want to hit their deliverables. It's never about the person. It's always about the task. But in their world, when they went to work, you never had to communicate about the person until it was time for a 360 review, which occurred once a year. So I suggest to you that maybe you just have a conversation and say to your boomer Gen X boss, hey, how could I do better? what time, when, how are my deliverables? How is my timing? How do you feel about me taking the occasional Monday morning off because I worked all weekend? You know, have that conversation and then just say, I worked on the weekend to get this done, relate it back to the task. So I want you to think about reframing it in a way so that you get what you need, but the Gen Xer hears you in a way that Gen Xer boomer, sorry, I just reread the text, allows you to get the message to them clearly versus saying, you don't understand me. And the response you'll get, let me tell you right now, will be, why is that my problem? Why do I need to understand you? What does this have to do with the deliverables we need for the end of the month? So you are going to get into an argument. And that's what I talked about when I opened the show. Fight or flight, chronic anxiousness, because we're constantly getting into those arguments. Now, that Gen X may be like Jeremy earlier and not wanting to not give you the politically correct answer or not being afraid they're not giving you a politically correct answer. So they'll A, avoid the question, B, change the subject, or C, just tag in their mind that you're a complainer and you're lazy. So those are all, like, I could tell you a lot of politically correct things, but that is what happens. And anyone in communication needs to start talking about this because these are guardrails. I want you to think about how to build trust and how to build productivity or how to build belief in brands. And the formula is really simple. Increase frequency of positive content. Decrease cloudiness in content. So what I mean by cloudiness is focusing on you and what you need. So it's me focused content. What you have to learn to do is clarity of content as it relates to the person or groups of people. And then you have to increase the positivity in content because you already know that it's 90% negative. So if you see that I say, I got this job done, I'm going to take Monday morning off, this is how it will affect the business versus you don't understand me. Does that help, Rich?
Yes, it does. It actually does. The key word that I got was not really talking about self but understanding on both sides and communicating it properly so that each side or each generation are able to hear what the other is saying without having that cloudiness.
So think about it this way. Mm-hmm. In all of our jobs, in our life, there's something we want to do, and that is influence people.
Mm-hmm.
Correct, Jeremy?
Correct.
100%.
So if you want to influence people, you obviously want to do it in a way that they feel good about it. Because otherwise you have the political effect, which is you polarize people. And yes, polarizing people will work on 2 out of 10 people, in some cases 3 out of 10 people. And you can see that in polls. But what happens when you don't have clarity of content, you put your needs first, is you create an ambiguous message. And that doesn't allow you to influence. Again, I could give you examples currently happening in politics, but I hate talking about politics. So let me give you an example in sales or in a typical customer journey. In a typical customer journey, when you go into a meeting, in the back of your mind is what you want to accomplish. You never ask, wonder what they want. I wonder how I can help them get it. And I wonder if my brand can help them get it. And when you're writing ad copy, when you're writing any of that, remember those 3 questions, because that will help you, as Dale Carnegie said, how to win friends and influence people. And I still think that's the best book ever written, because it doesn't change our no matter how we communicate, the outcome's always the same. We need to influence people. And the majority of us wouldn't mind doing it in a positive way because it reduces our stress. Does that make sense?
It does. I love your example. I love the communication. I love this conversation. Can I throw in a suggestion here? And this is something that we do at Sticky Branding. And I think the thing that is missing in all of these is assumptions. And if I remember my grade 6 teacher, Mrs. Dixon, she said, when you assume, you make an ass of you and me. And it's stuck in my head.
And I remember that.
And so you can combat this both as an employee and as a leader. So one of the things that we do at Sticky Branding is we work on our social contract as a team and as individuals. So, for instance, I have a new employee starting on Monday, and we will, in our one of our very first exercises, she and I will start to establish a social contract. How do you want to, the questions will be, where do you thrive in your role? What kind of communication empowers you, makes you happy, makes you feel successful? How do you deal with conflict? How are we going to communicate with each other when something goes wrong? And we just start that conversation on day one. And we check in. And we do this on a biannual basis where we actually bring the whole company together and we look at our team's social contract and we talk about it. And the purpose of it is to open the door to have a conversation so that when problems arise, like I feel like I'm overworked, I'm doing 12-hour days and I'm not recognized. Are you communicating that and are you getting to the root cause? It's incumbent on both parties to have that conversation. Without that conversation, nothing happens. Taking the same example one step further, I have a marketing manager that I was working with who was always concerned to go talk to other people in the organization because they were her bosses or two levels above her. And she didn't want to offend her boss by being proactive, but nothing was getting done. So I encouraged them to ask permission. Now go to your boss, Stephanie, talk to Garrett and ask him specifically if this is okay and what are the rules of engagement. And she was completely surprised by how open and willing and excited that he was, that she would be willing to go and have those conversations and pick up the ball and run with it when he wasn't available. And so I think when we use terms like anxiety, self-care, work-life balance, they're all symptoms that are focused on yourself versus dealing with how do we work together as a team and as a group to achieve shared goals and experiences. And that's what work is. It's no one's ever doing it in total isolation.
100%. And you know what, Jeremy? Let me give you a quiz. Let's take a quiz right now that will help you identify your team's preferred language. And what I mean by that is, do they prefer visual language, auditory language, kinesthetic language, or a mix of two? So you ready to take a test?
I am excited, Leah.
Excuse me, I have the hiccups. I'm trying to go on mute when I hiccup. Richardson, do you want to play too?
Yes. This sounds
okay.
Fine.
So just note down your answers. This is called our VAC test, and I've been doing it for years and years. And what it does is it helps you understand your strength as a communicator. And when you give it to someone else, it helps them understand their strengths. So if you don't want to do any analysis by looking how people communicate to you in their emails, in their text, and in their Slack, use this test in a team meeting. So this is on page 55 of my book, by the way, Message Received, if you want to use it. When seeking travel directions, I, A, use an app on my phone, B, ask someone for directions, C, follow my nose, or maybe use a compass. A, B, or C? Question two. I tend to say, I see what you mean, I hear what you're saying, or C, I know how you feel. So A, I see, B, I hear, C, I know how you feel. Question number three. To teach someone something, I, A, write instructions, B, explain verbally, or C, demonstrate and let them have a try? Question 4. I tend to say, watch how I do it, listen to me explain this, or C, you try it yourself. Number 5. When choosing a new car, I, A, read the reviews, B, discuss it with friends, or C, test drive what I want, A, B, or C. Only a few more. I tend to say, A, show me, B, tell me, C, let me try. I remember things best by A, writing notes, saying words aloud or repeating them in my mind, or C, doing and practicing the activity or imagining it being done. So, to get your score, add up all your A's, your B's, and your C's. And then look at the answer key here to determine your communication preferences. So, if you're mostly A, you're visual. If you're mostly B, you're auditory. And if you're mostly C, you're kinesthetic. And so, what I want to show you there and show you for your teams there as we begin to wrap up is a snapshot of your current communication habits. And it identifies what pattern your brain looks for and connects with in digital communication. And it reveals your primary and secondary preferences for communication. Now, I know what the generational anchoring benchmarks are for every generation, because I studied it with 34,000 people. But for you to begin to understand your customers, for you to begin to understand your staff, with your staff, give them this quiz. And then when you're saying, how do we communicate? How do we get things done? Or how do we talk when we're angry? Give them a guideline of, our team is currently very visual kinesthetic, so use those words. Our team is very auditory. Send a voice memo when you text. Start thinking about that way, and those are what I mean by guardrails. And once you start introducing guardrails, like you have a fun quiz, it works, it's worked for 15 years, you could then start to build on that to enhance your culture. Because that's what I mean by building trust in a team. You increase the frequency of positive content using the right words for the right person, and then you increase the clarity of the content, using the right phrasing for the right demographic. Does that help?
I think that's brilliant, Mary. You know, I think it is. And I'm so glad you pointed out that the quiz is in the book, Message Received. It's a book that I refer to many times and refer to our clients frequently too. And for everyone listening, it's available up on Amazon, Message Received by Dr. Mary Donahue. I came out as auditory, as someone who talks things out a lot, but I do know through doing this exercise with my employees that they aren't all auditory. The majority of my team are more kinesthetic. They gotta learn and do by doing, and it's difficult for me because I want to talk it out and they want to try it. So I think understanding these things is important, but I'd love just to ask a step further. Is there other ways that we can learn Message Received? Do you have ways that organizations can engage you to implement these ideas?
Absolutely. I have a whole course people can take called Digital Concussion. Thank you for asking. It's designed in short snapshot videos. I speak like you. I do a lot of public speaking. We do workshops. And you and I are creating positive player language workshops. So I'm very excited to continue to move forward this way and help people understand how to increase the frequency of their content positively and how to increase the clarity of their content.
Where do we find the information on that, Dr. Mary?
You can go to thedigitalwellnesscenter.com. Thank you for asking, Jeremy. And let's talk about your book as we wrap up. Sticky Branding. It's available in bookstores and on Amazon.com. And Richardson, thank you very much. I'm sorry we didn't get to find out what your VAC was. We ended.
That's okay. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Have a great week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks, Jeremy.
The preceding program, Chicago's Weekend Wake-Up Call, was sponsored by the Digital Wellness Center and, to the extent applicable, their guests. The views and opinions expressed therein do not necessarily reflect those of Heartland Signal, LLC, or its management.